variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise. Hi, Denise.
Hello.
How are you?
You know how I am? I am how I am, and that's all that I am. Okay. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Obviously, this podcast will be heavily on the topic of the events that happened from Saturday to Sunday in Orlando. But let's begin with the Tony Awards, which were also highly affected by the events that happened in Orlando. The Tony Awards were held on Sunday evening, and throughout the day, they were trying to discuss if they were even going to have the show, because they didn't know if it would be appropriate to do so. But in the end, they did decide to do it. And as a theater geek, I'm very excited that they did. First of all, as a show of solidarity, they began the show with the host standing with his back to the crowd and the camera to the front, so as to say not only the host, but also all of the people in the audience stand with the people of Orlando. And James Corden, who was hosting the Tony Awards for the first time, said, "Hate will never win." And then it went on to be an amazing show that went long. But for the first time in the Tony's history, all four of the major categories, lead actor, lead actress, featured actor, and featured actress, featured winners of color. Three of those from the play Hamilton, one from The Color Purple. Now, Hamilton was up for 16 Tonys and went home with 11, including two for Lin-Manuel Miranda himself. I'm excited. It does mean that my opportunity to watch Hamilton and not go broke have diminished completely, but they are also moving to Chicago. So there is still hope to get a seat to this show at some time before it stops.
Ain't nobody trying to go to Chicago. Ain't nobody trying to go to Chicago.
Oh, stop that.
I think it was amazing that they did the tribute, especially Lin Miranda. Actually, in his speech, he addressed what happened in Orlando.
Yes, he read a sonnet that he wrote, because why wouldn't Lin-Manuel Miranda accept his Tony Award for Best Score without a sonnet? Love is love and cannot be swept aside.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was really moving and wonderful that they kept that on their minds as they were able to kind of receive those awards. The four actors that you mentioned that received the top awards right there, they're all Black, right?
They are people of color. I don't know if they all are Black.
Okay. Okay.
I'd say they're Black, but
police say they're Black.
I'd say they're Black, but in written media, they were called of color. So
yeah, but they Black.
They
so
Black.
that's a pet peeve of mine. Just so you know, it's a pet peeve of mine when Black people are called people of color. I think that in some way it's a form of erasure. I understand it if we're in a group of non-white people, then you want to use the term people of color. That's fine. But like, if it's clearly Black people that you're talking about, why not just say Black people?
Well, I think that's new to a lot of people. Like, you know, there was a time where, you know, people of color is a self-proclaimed term by Black women, right? And so there was a time where that was the way to address Black people. And a lot of people still choose to do so. I don't think everyone has recognized that there is a difference between Black and people of color simply because it was Black women who chose to use that term to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people understand that the term people of color is an umbrella term that includes other people, not just Black people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's this nonspecific. And in this situation around Orlando, I'm looking at a lot of issues that happen with erasure. Because
we'll get to that. We're not talking about Orlando right now, though.
But I think it's problematic that that the term POC is used as a form of erasure. Instead of saying, well, Black people, you say POC, have this issue. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that it is not specific to all people of color. So it's, to me, it's a bit of a problem, the way that people are using the term to decentralize Black issues and Black people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that James Corden was hilarious. He did take a very, very clear dig at the presumptive Republican presidential nominee by saying, think of tonight as the Oscars, but with diversity. And he went on to say, it's so diverse, Donald Trump has threatened to build a wall around the theater. So I thought that was great. But, you know, it was a night filled with a long list of amazing presenters like Carole King, whose musical is actually playing right now in London. Oprah Winfrey, of course, who teed up for The Color Purple. Barbara Streisand, Josh Groban, Gloria Estefan. And all of these people took a moment to pay their respects to the victims and the victims' families of Orlando. I asked myself, what does this mean now for Azealia Banks, who came out with her apology just 6 days ago, apologizing for using the word faggot, explaining, basically using the same explanation that you were giving her, that she right. grew up in New York, she had a hard life, and she's always had to fight.
Mm-hmm. All my life I had to fight.
That's okay, Sophia. Okay, Sophia. But what do you think about her apology? Like, does that have any, like, can we even take it seriously? Like, right. timing wise, it's, you know, it's.
She did that before Orlando, if I remember correctly.
I said it was 6 days ago. Yes.
No. That's, I just want to clarify that because you said timing wise. And so I'm glad she did that before Orlando, because if she had done it after Orlando, nobody would have even thought about taking her even a little bit seriously. Mm-hmm. I totally believe her, but I'm in a very unique position of having grown up on the same streets that she grew up on, mm-hmm. going to the same school districts that she went to. Mm-hmm. So I understand where she's coming from a very personal perspective. I don't necessarily think that that's going to translate to the general public. I think that she continues to be problematic in a way that will continue to make people uncomfortable. I don't really think that people initially even know why Azealia Banks makes them uncomfortable. She knows, and she has called that out, and that's made it even more awkward and more uncomfortable for people. And now she's, you know, bleaching her skin.
She what?
Oh yeah, that came out. So Azealia Banks, Kola Booth, you may know, right? She wrote the sexy part of the Bible. And she's super, a lot of things, outspoken, controversial, all this stuff. Uh-huh. Had an exclusive in Beyond Black and White, where she talks about Azealia Banks being her play daughter and having this wonderful personality, even though she's so problematic. And one of the things that she talks about is that Azealia Banks bleaches her skin, and I don't agree with it. Kola Booth herself is dark skinned, has always advocated for dark skinned women, sometimes in a really divisive way, I'll say, but has also pushed that forward. And Azealia Banks is very willfully, and has been for a minute, bleaching her skin. And then after that came out, it was confirmed by Banks herself and on her Instagram. And then it was confirmed by White Initius, which is the brand that she chooses to use to bleach her skin. One of the things that she has said is that the way that I am treated as a dark-skinned woman makes me want to lie down and die sometimes. And then goes on to talk about how men have no love for black dark-skinned women. And I'm sure all of that has played into a role, especially in the longer article where Kola Booth sort of stands in for her with her bleaching her skin. So if it's not one thing with her, it's another. It's kind of like a potpourri of problems with Azealia Banks, right? Like, so you've got her homophobia on the one side, but she herself has said she identifies as queer, right? Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, her very, very pro-Black and having these pro-Black stances, but then calling people and then saying that she suffered herself against dark skin stigma or colorism. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, calling other people things like tar baby, right? Like, and attacking other people for it. So it's, I think that we're really, a lot of, you know, people want to reduce this to mental health issues, which it might be. Mm-hmm. In any case, we're looking at a really complex and troubled individual.
I am left without words on the bleaching bit. For someone who comes out, supposedly has claims to be so pro-Black and to make the statements that she does because she just is so pro-Black, to hear that that person has admittedly been... I'll leave it. I don't. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Yeah, but I mean, like, what is the standard that we hold those people to? And is it realistic? You know, if a...
Really? Are we really going to try to defend this person right now on some skin bleaching?
I absolutely hate the fact that Azealia is doing this. She looks a mess. she put some makeup on it or whatever, but she put a makeup free picture when she, you know, with the white initial, when she's in Brazil, and it's so clear. Mm. But, you know, it does all of the things that bleaching does to your skin, which isn't cute.
No.
So she looks a bit ragged.
Okay. Mm. Anyway.
And she's willing to make that trade-off because of hopes of something better for herself.
Well.
And it's problematic. And
I can't. I'm sorry. I can't. So moving on, I'd also like to just briefly send our condolences to someone else who passed away in Orlando. So Saturday morning, I woke up to the headline news that there had been a shooting in Orlando as well. And it was for Christina Grimmie, who once starred on the show The Voice. She was shot and then eventually died, succumbed to her wounds later in the hospital. And she was shot by a 27-year-old white male who there hasn't been a great deal of information to come out. I think it's been lost, but more than likely some type of deranged fan. I wasn't a fan of Grimmie. I didn't really know her, but I know that a lot of people were quite touched by her. And since this is like her pop music or pop culture segment, I just wanted to say that, wanted to acknowledge that something else also happened in Orlando over the weekend. And Maroon 5's Adam Levine has actually come out to say that he's going to cover all the costs of the funeral. So there are good people in the world. Look at that.
Yeah. And I'm really waiting for stuff to come out about the assailant who died after he was tackled by Grimmie's brother and shot himself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm waiting for stuff to come out because if you remember about a month ago, there was a lot of talk in social media community, especially by women that have Grimmie status, about how much harassment they're getting and how it's not taking seriously by law enforcement officials. So I would not be at all surprised if this was one of those cases where this guy had basically outed himself, mm-hmm. probably said to see what he was going to do, and just was not given any kind of serious consideration right. by law enforcement. So that, you know, I'm totally suspicious about the silence around this guy.
Yes.
I really want her family to go through all her accounts and get receipts.
Absolutely. So again, rest in peace and our condolences to Christina Grimmie's family. In our second segment, obviously everyone knows by now that there was a mass shooting at an Orlando nightclub called Pulse. Pulse describes itself as Orlando's hottest gay bar. That mass shooting left 49 dead and at least 53 injured. And what seems to be the case is it was carried out by a man named Omar Mateen, someone born in the United States in New York to parents who were immigrants of Afghanistan. And he was 29 years old. And it's unclear now, and we're not here to speculate on what his reasons were. But he made a choice to go into this club. It was Latin night, and he killed a lot of people. Where do you want to start?
Hmm.
So what we do know about Omar Martinez, he was married. He's been married twice. His first wife has come out clearly as saying she met him, you know, online. Her name is Satora Yusufi. She met him online. It was clear to her from very early on that he was mentally ill. He was very abusive. He denied her access to her family, to her friends. He wouldn't even let her leave the house. Now, she moved. Granted, they met online, and she moved to Florida to marry him and live with him quite quickly. And someone who's come out as her father, it's been unconfirmed if it is her father, spoke out about it and said that he didn't agree with that. She made that decision, recognized really quickly that this was going nowhere, and her family came and rescued her basically from him. But he then remarried to Noor Zahi Salman and has a son with her. And the odd thing is that Salman, the second wife, says that she knew that her husband was planning an attack, and she claims that she tried to dissuade him. Obviously, she didn't do enough, and it's unclear at this point why she didn't inform law enforcement about his plans if she did know. But she says that she accompanied him to buy ammunition and a gun holster. She drove him to Pulse because he wanted to scope it out. The two weapons that he was known to use in the attack, he had just recently purchased legally. He had successfully filed for his license and purchase the weapons. So those are facts. I don't want to spend a lot of time on speculation here. What I do want to focus on is what it means for the LGBTQ community. We've seen a lot of solidarity actions just in London. There were two major actions. One that I attended, which was extremely white, unsurprisingly, because it was held in Soho on the Monday. It was the streets were filled. There was a release of balloons. There was a singing choir. There were men voguing on the street. So on the one hand, there was silence to honor and acknowledge those who had passed. But there was also a celebration of LGBTQ culture. And on the Tuesday, unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend that. That was the larger gathering at the place where UK Black Pride normally takes place. That was, from what my understanding is, a large gathering of people of color from the LGBTQ community. But of course, white people were also there. And people had, there was spoken word, some people gave speeches, and people just enjoyed each other's company. There have been similar actions all over the US. I don't know, was there anything in Vienna?
Not to my knowledge. There was something else happening in Vienna, but I don't know if there was a specific action for Orlando and Vienna.
Okay. So what it has done is bring a lot of attention to the LGBTQ community in all of its many facets and all of its many contradictions. And I'm sure some people even saw the newscast that happened here in the UK where someone walked off camera because the pundits refused to call it an attack on the LGBTQ community. They kept saying, we're all humans. Why be divisive? Why are we focusing on the fact that it happened at a gay club? It was an attack on people who want to have a good time. That's nonsense. It's just nonsense. It cannot, that's nonsense. So of course, there's been a lot of speculation. People who know Omar have come out to say that he was gay. They've come out to say that he asked them out even. People from the nightclub said that they recognized his face. Once the picture started circulating, he would go to Pulse on a regular basis and sit in the corner and get drunk, have to be kicked out because of his because he would become unruly after drinking a lot. There have been there have been people very angry with the president of the United States because he's not calling it radical Islam. You know, a lot of things coming out of a lot of different things. And then, of course, there are the reports that Omar Mateen, as he was shooting people in the bathroom, he asked if any Black people were in the bathroom and said he didn't want to kill or hurt any Black people because Black people had suffered enough at the hands of white people. So there's a lot of layers to this story. I don't think that serves mainstream media well because they like their one narrative. What I have seen online is a lot of white people in the U.S. specifically wanting to just like write it off as another act of ISIS violence.
Yeah, because it's convenient for them. They want to do what the British newscasters are trying to do on Sky News, which is make it less specific and perform erasure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you have, what's his name, Nick Jonas, officiating, the pop star that isn't even gay, officiating at Stonewall, speaking at Stonewall at the vigil held there, I think that that's all part of the erasure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that he's also a complex individual. The thing about him being gay or potentially being gay, I want to say this. To my knowledge, no one has come out and said, I've had a gay relationship with a guy. What I've heard is that he has put out maybe some ads asking for a gay encounter. But this is
He also like specifically friends of his, or let's say acquaintances, mm-hmm. that he met in the academy. They partied with him at Pulse and he asked one of them out.
Okay. So yes, that's what I've heard, is that he's asked people out and that he may have put some things online and mm-hmm. asking people out.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard anyone that has closed that deal.
Right.
And maybe that person is going to come out yet. But what I want to point out is that especially homophobia, people often use that as a tactic to find people to abuse or to kill. And we know he's a killer. So he may have just been scouting.
Right.
Not necessarily exploring his sexuality.
Well, I'm not here to speculate on his motivations. There are enough people doing that, and I think it's useless. What I am more interested in is what all of these things have shown us about the LGBTQ community and what we can learn from it.
Well, I think the LGBTQ community is extremely whitewashed, and that's part of the problem that's happening here, is that he chose this club. He chose it on a night where it would be majority Latino and Black people there. Mm-hmm. So he's very specific about this attack, not just about the sexuality piece, but about the race piece and the fact that he's calling out race as he's attacking people mm-hmm. even shows that. That being the case, I think that the voices that are allowed to speak in this moment and that are given spotlights in this moment are predominantly white.
Yes.
When the victims were not.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting because we posted a video on our Facebook page, a group, an LGBTQ group. In the U.S., interviewed POCs and Blacks on the subject. And of course, you know, they used all of those big words that we like to use in the queer community. Patriarchy, toxic masculinity, this, that, and the other, right? And they basically said, until those things, those structures have been dismantled, it will not be possible for all of us to be free, right? And mm-hmm. basically what happened was white people felt, and who knows if they were even queer, white people felt the need to comment on this video saying that not only Black and brown people were killed, this video erases the white people's names who were also victims of this attack. And I think that's very interesting. It goes back to this idea, what white supremacy has done is white supremacy says we are pro-white and anti-Black.
Mm-hmm.
But being pro-Black doesn't mean anti-white. And it's kind of like saying all lives matter. It doesn't, no one is disregarding or not honoring the lives that were lost of the, I don't know, two white people who died in the club. The point is, until all of the oppressions have been acknowledged and dismantled, no one can be free. But white people don't seem to understand that. And I think it's very telling that even on a day like Sunday, where everybody was, you know, in shock and awe of what happened, that white people still felt the need to put themselves...
To centralize whiteness.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Look, I mean, whiteness is being centralized in the aftermath, right? So they want their two white victims, so those two white victims could be the face of humanity in that club, even though those two victims are not necessarily representative of the racial makeup of that club.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going on there. They're going to need that for them to make sense of it. Because what white people don't understand after they've had a steady diet of white supremacy for 30 some odd years, their entire lifetime, is that they don't really regard non-white people as human. So for them to humanize this event and for it to be relevant for them, having gay people in the mix is not enough. They need those people to also be white.
Would you say that's less of a conscious thing happening? That's an automated mechanism?
It's totally automatic. It's mm-hmm. totally automatic. It's completely automatic. You could see them looking for normative narratives. Mm-hmm. People who were married up in the club.
Or people who wanted to get married. Yes. Right. And now they're being buried together. I did see those reports. Mm-hmm.
You can see that. They're not talking about the situation that, you know, there were undocumented people in that club
right.
that were killed.
Right.
That there are people whose parents are struggling to get the right to come and bury their children or to pick up their children who were killed in that club because their parents are not residents of the United States. That's something that they're really struggling hard. And I think that if anything good comes out of it is that if it puts the might of the LGBT lobby behind the issue of gun control in America, by all means, go ahead and do that. I think that a more pressing need within the LGBT community that often goes overlooked is one of immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Might of the LGBT lobby is very reluctant to touch that because they're centralized on whiteness and American whiteness specifically. So
what can we as a community do? It is June. Happy Pride Month. It's June. Pride will be celebrated in many, many places in the coming weeks and even the coming months. Is there something that should be centered around the Pride celebrations coming up? Is there a central theme that unites us across race and borders and whatever else?
I don't know about that. I mean, I'm not feeling so... I know that a lot of people are using this Orlando thing as a coming together moment. For me, and they see a tremendous sense of unity and solidarity. This moment troubles me so deeply because here you have queer people asking for more police in communities, queer people asking for things that I am morally absolutely opposed against and have been shown statistically to just hurt our communities, especially those of us that are not white
right.
and straight appearing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm seeing all the fault lines that this situation brings out. Yeah, I'm a half empty girl, you know, glass half empty. I mean, that's who I am. So I think that the Pride celebrations will continue. I think they should continue. There was a situation in Los Angeles where someone was apprehended on the way to LA Pride with guns, ammunition, the whole nine yards.
I think that
I hope that report coordinated effort.
That report was changed, though. I know that's what everyone reported in the beginning, but then they went back on it and said that was actually not the destination of that person.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seemed like he was like a general bad situation coming out of Indiana or somewhere. Right? Like he was just like at the bone, had just committed rape and was on a hook for that, and then decided that he was going to load up his car and just go do something somewhere.
Right.
And he just happened to be near Pride in the Orlando. Of course, the anxiety is, okay, here, this is happening to us again.
Right. Well, there were also the two Marines who got a little happy with their guns and took a picture with their assault rifle and said, coming to a gay club near you. So they're under investigation now. And they've shamed the word Marine, in my opinion. But
well, I'm hoping for a dishonorable discharge after this. That's ridiculous.
What did you say?
I'm hoping for a dishonorable discharge.
Oh, yeah. That will happen pretty quickly in the Marine Corps. They just don't stand for it. I don't know. I was asking myself, is there a greater thing to be gained through it all? I thought it was very interesting. A lot of my white gay friends here in London were very moved by the story, were very emotional throughout the week, felt a bit, you know, desperate that the world is such a bad place. You know, those are all normal feelings to come up. But I do ask myself sometimes, what is it exactly that moves people about this particular story? Is it just the number? Because we also reported this week, Goddess Diamond, a Black trans woman, was killed. And those reports don't move people as much. And of course, you know, it's not something that happens in a place like Pulse where so many people are killed, and I'm not trying to make any comparisons, but there are a lot of people being killed on the regular simply because of who they are. And that's what so many people were talking about at the London Vigil. These people were killed simply because of, you know, living their life. But that happens every day, especially for queer people of color.
Exactly. And that's why I was saying that if looking at the sheer number of deaths that happen over a consistent amount of time, that while I would totally appreciate LGBT people moving towards a gun control lobby, there are other things that are more prescient in or present in our lives that take our lives at a much more regular basis than some, you know, someone coming in with a gun and shooting.
Right. I agree. Well, obviously, it's not something that we can solve in one day and in one conversation. We'll continue to follow the story. And if it makes sense to speak on it at length again, we'll do so. It's important to say again that we send our sincerest condolences to the families affected by this tragedy. My family, I have quite a bit of family in Florida, have all been sincerely affected in one way or another by the whole story. Hopefully, let's keep the energy going this Pride season, not forget about the victims, do what we can to support them in whatever way we can. If it's not financially, maybe it's through some form of action, but it would be nice to see what is called an LGBTQ community actually become one. And in our third segment, I'll start because you're ridiculous. So what am I looking forward to? I'm looking forward to the fact that today, tickets for Afropunk London are going on sale. Yes.
At some point.
Now, actually, they're already supposed to be on sale while we're recording this podcast. They were not. But that's okay. I'm confident that at some point today.
How is your website on CP Town? Like, how does that happen? Because you can schedule things, you know, things can happen automatically. You could go to sleep, you sleep late. You can schedule things.
The website
is. But your website is on CP Town. That's a problem.
That's what it is, though. That's what it is. Yes. Still, you know, I'm looking forward to it. The lineup, I don't know how I feel about it yet, but I am excited to see MIA on it.
You were excited for MIA on it? You forgave MIA?
Yeah.
After she said we allow, Black people are allowed to talk about.
Look, the way that you give all these permissions to your girl Banks, I give some of those.
I don't give banks, no permissions. Banks is messed up to a T. I'm just talking about whether or not she's going to be forgiven or not. I'm just trying to analyze a serial killer here. I know what I'm doing. I'm real clear. I'm doing a forensic examination. All right. It's not necessarily a condemnation. It's a forensic examination because I believe for real, her career might be straight up dead.
Yes, probably dead. But I can appreciate a lot of things about MIA, but I'm just talking about this lineup, right? Like there's my comment. I was asking about one of my favorite bands, The Thirst. My comment got loads of comments and likes. I was like, this lineup looks great, but where's The Thirst? The Thirst is a band. They're kind of like rock and soul and funk. Some guys, some black guys from Brixton representing South London. They're great. And apparently they gave their last show, which I didn't know about, at the end of May because they've separated. But someone corrected that and said they didn't separate because they're not getting along. They separated because of some legal management issues with their name. So someone else was like, they still could have been booked. So we're all hoping that some things will still change on the lineup because there are some bands just from London who have like a good following here who aren't on the lineup. But I'm still excited about it. It's going to be
September. It's only one day, right?
It's only one day. September 24th at Ali Pali.
Afropunk.
I'm not sure how they're going to like pack that whole lineup into one day.
They better start at noon for all that.
They must be starting at Ali Pali at like 11.
They might be doing three song sets.
It's going to be a whole day, not just the evening of performances. So I'm looking forward to that, especially if it means my Afropunk Paris crew is going to get it in with me in London. That would be dope.
I told you I'm bringing my baby and everything.
Yeah. So what are you looking forward to?
What am I looking forward to? Well, I'm looking forward to my upcoming trip. You know that. You know people don't want to hear about my trip, but I'm going to be in the Caribbean for all of July.
Yes, that's very exciting. So, I'm going to hate on you the whole time. Does that mean that we won't be recording?
I don't know. We got to figure it out. I don't know if they got internet down there. I got to power up a donkey or something. I don't know what the situation is.
Aluminum cans or something. Some tin cans and a string. Who knows?
I don't know. I might have to ask the dictator to launch the windmill. I don't know what's going to happen is what I'm saying. When I figure it out.
So you heard it here first, listeners. We can't guarantee that we'll be recording during that time, but we'll do our best. Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. Until next time, peace out.